at Thursday afternoon or Thursday evening, and that lasts actually, it's going on right now and lasts until Sunday evening, a little bit later this afternoon. And the funny thing is about a retreat, you know, you go to a camp and you know, we don't do a lot. We wake up in the morning, we have breakfast, we have some worship time, we have some speakers, and the day is full, and there's some free time in there, and we did some playing, and somehow, you know, played a little football outside, and it started to rain on us for like a second, and then stopped. But it can get really tiring. It's funny, you know, it's not like a lot of physical activity, but it's a fairly emotional experience. And, you know, if any of you have ever sit at a conference or, you know, spend a whole day in meetings, you know, that can be really tiring. And so at about yesterday afternoon, the person next to me had this little orange bottle with a, you know, little lid on it, about that big, called 5-Hour Energy. You heard of this stuff? It's hard not to have heard about it. A lot of people have tried it. You know, obviously the guy next to me has tried it. I haven't. I don't know why. It makes me nervous before drinking it. But, you know, I'm a coffee drinker, and so I had my coffee. You know, I don't want to pick on the 5-Hour Energy thing because, you know, I drink my coffee in the morning and again, you know, in the afternoon. And I was thinking about, though, this 5-Hour Energy stuff. As I looked at it, it says that it's got about as much caffeine as a premium cup of coffee, and that's right. I did some investigating. The numbers aren't too far off. And it's got it says the secret is B vitamins. It's packed with B vitamins. So, you know, and it says, you know, it's got the numbers on the back, and it says, you know, that your daily requirement of like vitamin B12 or something, and it's like 9,000% of how much you need for the day. And there was another B vitamin, and it was like 700% of how much you need for the day. And I'm like, well, do you really need that much? You know, I can't help but wonder, like, what good does it all do? So I actually investigated a little bit, and it turns out that there's absolutely no studies, there's no scientific correlation at all between B vitamins and energy. That really, the only thing that's in there that gives you any kind of energy is the caffeine, which is the same amount of caffeine that's in a cup of coffee, and I like coffee, so I don't need to drink my little berry juice or whatever it is. But as I was looking at this, you know, I've wondered, you know, what is it about this 5-Hour Energy? It's so popular right now. And I read that their advertising budget is $90 million. And I thought, whoa, that's a big advertising budget. No wonder I've heard of it. It's on commercials. It's on the radio all the time. You know, it's got a slick little packaging. It's a neat little bottle. It's always up front at Walgreens, you know, right on the counter, it seems like. And then I was thinking, then I read further, and it says that the energy drink industry is a $9 billion industry. And that 5-Hour Energy has, according to it was a CBS News report, actually, said 5-Hour Energy has a 12% market share on a $9 billion industry. Now, some of you just heard that and know what that means. You've got that kind of mathematical business mind, but I hear 12% of 9 billion, I hear 6 gajillion, you know, I don't know. But, so I got out a calculator and I looked at, and I figured it out, and it turns out that 12% of $9 billion is a lot of money, and 90 million really isn't that much compared to that figure. And then I was thinking, okay, so this is a huge industry, and I didn't have to look up those numbers to know that. You go into a Walgreens or a convenience store, and you look at the drinks that are available, and, you know, there's some pop, there's your good old-fashioned pop, you know, the 700 brands of pop, all with caffeine, and there's the, you know, juices, and then, you know, a little section of juice, maybe a half a shelf for, like, milk, and then another huge thing for energy drinks, all sorts of different kinds of energy drinks, it seems like, and Gatorade, and, you know, things that are going to give you energy and replenish your thirst and help you keep going. And then I think about the coffee shops that, you know, you can go outside and throw a rock and you're going to hit a coffee shop sometimes. And they're all over the place. And I could only come to one conclusion when I think about these coffee shops and these energy drinks and all this. We're tired. We're a tired group of people. You know? People all the time, they're looking for something to give them a little bit more energy, a pick-me-up. And, you know, it was funny because I was reading, you know what's one of the best things to drink when you're tired? Water. Crazy, huh? But then if you look at the bottled water section in the Walgreens is huge, too. It's like we've got the cleanest, cheapest water in the world, and yet we still pay $3 for a bottle of it. But that's another topic. We're a tired people. You know, I've read some stuff that says that, you know, we're a sleep-deprived nation. The most sleep-deprived culture there's ever been in the world. In the history of mankind, we're the most sleep-deprived culture because which is ironic considering how many modern conveniences we have. You know, we've got all these things that make life faster, right? I mean, we've got 30-minute meals and we've got 8-minute abs and, you know, you can do your whole get fat and work it off in 38 minutes. And yet still, somehow, we're always busy. We're always busy. No matter how many things we have that make things faster, it seems like we're always crammed full of the day and we're weary and we're tired. And so I hope if you're tired, that's part of the reason why you're here. Because we as a church, the church is supposed to be this place to fill up again. You know, I've heard it described, the Holy Spirit as a power described as a waterfall that's always there, just beyond the surface. The ever-flowing stream of grace and justice and power and righteousness. It's an ever-flowing stream that flows, and all we have to do is to reach into it and tap into it every once in a while. Just reach our hands into that water. And if you've ever reached your hand into a waterfall, you know, it doesn't take much. And you reach out, and then all of a sudden it splashes all over you. And that's what worship should be, is a moment to come and reach our hand into the waterfall and be refreshed by the music and the words and the power and the fellowship and the Holy Spirit that comes. And see, Jesus knew this. Jesus understood this. That you need to be refreshed, that even Jesus, you know, he was a busy guy. He had people, you know, pressuring him all the time. There were crowds following him. He was healing people. He was feeding people. He was, you know, talking to his disciples and teaching them. And you know, they never got it. You can only imagine, you know, the stressful teacher that comes home from class and, you know, like the kids just don't get it. And it seems, I feel like Jesus is that way with his disciples sometimes. And so what does he do? He goes off to by himself constantly through the Gospels. He's going off by himself to pray, to not truly be by himself, but to simply be with his Heavenly Father and pray and be renewed. You know, the idea of Sabbath rest, holy rest, is a biblical one. It's an important biblical one. It flows throughout the Old Testament and the laws that God laid down that weren't meant to restrict us, that weren't meant to keep us from being free. It was meant to help us. The idea of Sabbath is one of renewal and rest and honoring God. And it's not just the day of the Sabbath, but it's a season of Sabbath. And it's not just in people, but it's in fields. And all of creation needs a time of rest. It's prevalent in the Old Testament. And Jesus modeled it as a leader to rest. And we've got this idea nowadays that if you're resting, you're not doing anything. But holy rest is important. And so Jesus had his followers were tired. The story that starts off, Jesus, comes immediately after the disciples, two big things that had worn them out. They had worked. They had been sent out into the mission field, and Jesus sent them out to go and to preach the good news and to spread the gospel, to heal the sick, to cast out demons, to feed the hungry, to go and do these things in my name. He empowered them, and he gave them instructions, and he sent them out, and they did it, and they came back, and they were energized, but they were tired too because, you know, they'd faced rejection along the way. And you know, even doing good works can wear you out sometimes. So that mix, you can imagine that mix of like energized and tired at the same time. And then they get this awful news that their friend, that Jesus, you know, the man that baptized Jesus, John the Baptist, had been killed. We didn't read that, but I mean, it happens immediately before this. And you know, there's nothing that can suck the energy out of you like the death of a friend, especially a sudden, surprising one. You know, shocking news can drain you, and it ravages you emotionally. And this is where they were. They were tired. So Jesus tells them, rest. Go and rest. Go off by yourself. Find an isolated place. They're good words to take heart when you're tired, when you're weary, when you've been doing the good work of God or doing whatever you need to be doing. You can grow tired sometimes. But they were interrupted. You know, rest can take a lot of forms. And there's holy rest, and there's, you know, you can, real holy rest is prayer and Bible reading and spending some time alone, you know, set apart. But, you know, you can get some other kinds of rest, too, that aren't maybe so, you know, shooting hoops for me is something that can actually be restful. Can, you know, recreation can be rest in a way. It can be renewing or watching a little bit of TV as long as it's, you know, that's not all you're doing, that kind of thing, you know. There's place for that. One thing, you know, that your pastoral staff here at Riverside enjoys a football game every now and then. If you weren't aware, it's a place. You know, it was a place for escape. It's a place to care about something, but not really. You know that I can care about it, kind of pretend to care about it because it really doesn't really matter. You know, you can have fun with it. It's a safe place to get wrapped up in for a little while and feel some emotion and then, you know, hopefully let it go. And I do that okay sometimes better than others. But it can get interrupted sometimes. And for football fans, and not just football fans, for people in general, it was interrupted pretty devastatingly this past November, when news of Jerry Sandusky came to light, and Penn State and Joe Paterno and Graham Spanier and Schultz and all of a sudden, you know, college presidents and athletic directors were household names, and this, you know, old assistant, retired assistant coach became, you know, the face of all that's wrong with this world. And as time has gone by, it's something that keeps popping up as the trial went through. And then the Free Report came out a couple weeks ago. If you're like me, I don't follow news that much, to be honest with you. I'm not one that gets wrapped up in big news stories very often. The 24-hour news cycle is draining as far as I'm concerned. It's one of the, not a fan of it. But this is one of those news stories that just got me. That it kind of shook me into reality, shook me out of that fantasy world that college sports is supposed to be. And suddenly we heard these stories of just of violence and abuse that we just didn't want to hear about. We get interrupted by the real world sometimes. We get interrupted by injustice. We get interrupted by abuse. We get interrupted by oppression. We get interrupted by tragedy. And those times are hard. And a lot of emotions can come up when that kind of thing happens. When you get interrupted by by this kind of devastation. And I, for one, felt a lot of anger. I cried a lot. I wept for the victims. I was angry at those that allowed it to happen. I was angry at people. You know, I was saddened by the tragedy that had affected so many people, not just the victims, but also the thousands of people whose trust was betrayed. And I was reminded that you get shaken out of rest sometimes. And then we've got a choice to make. Once you've felt that anger, once you've cried those tears, once you've shaken your head and pounded your desk and said, "Why, God?" We've got a choice to make. Jesus and his disciples were given a choice there, right? They were going off to rest, but all of a sudden, they were interrupted. They were interrupted by people that were in need. They were interrupted by people that were hungry, that were starving for something real in their lives. They were hungry for people that needed, they were interrupted by people that needed healing and needed something true, some love, some grace. They were interrupted by the needs of people. They were interrupted by a bunch of sheep that needed a shepherd. And they had a choice in that moment. They could choose to send them away, or they could choose to feel compassion. And Jesus felt compassion. You know, first he noticed that they were there. His eyes were open to the need. His eyes were open to the struggle. His eyes were open to the injustice and to the oppression and the abuse that so many people suffer through. And then he felt compassion. So he taught the people. He brought them in. He gave them what they needed. And then when that was over, then the disciples thought, well, okay, it's good. We took care of them. You taught. Now let's send them on their way. We've got a problem coming here, Jesus. We're out here all by ourselves. And these people are going to start to get hungry. We need to send them home. Get rid of them. What are we going to do? How are we going to feed them, they thought. And Jesus said, "You feed them." Oh, man. That's a big job. "You feed them," he said. Folks, right outside these doors, there are people that are hurting. Maybe sitting amongst us, there are people that are hurting. Odds are, those that we are gathered with are hurting. They're lonely. They're lost. Like sheep with no shepherd, they don't know the love of God and Jesus Christ. They don't know the kind of love that's offered to them, the kind of grace that can set you free. They don't know what a full table looks like. They don't know what a cool house feels like. They don't know what nice clothes feel like to put on, or a new pair of shoes feels like to lace up. They feel the bitter, bitter cold of the wintertime and wonder how this coat is going to keep them warm. Folks, there are people outside these doors that are like sheep without a shepherd, that need help, that are suffering in injustice, suffering in oppression. There are children right now that are in fear of another monster. Jerry Sandusky's in jail, but there's thousands like him. And they're hoping that we don't notice. They're hoping that we don't pay attention. They're hoping that we don't talk about it in nice, comfortable places. They're hoping that in good company that we wouldn't possibly guess that it could happen right here amongst us. And we can be like the disciples and say, Jesus, send them away. Help, let's find some place for them to get some help. Let's do, you know, somebody else can take care of it. And it can get overwhelming. But it starts with compassion. It starts with compassion. And you might be wondering, who's going to feed them? And here Jesus responds, you do it. You feed them. Now I'll help you. I'll give you the power. I'll give you the resources. I'll give you the help and the courage and the strength to endure. I'll give you the Holy Spirit. I'll give you the advocate, the defender, the one who sustains you and upholds you. I'll give you the living water. I'll give it all to you. I will let it flow like an ever-flowing stream, like a great waterfall, and all you have to do is reach your hand out and tap into it and feel it. I'll give it to you. I'm there with you, but you got to do it. I was angry when I read the news about Sandusky. I was angry over and over again, and I shed many tears. But then I heard Jesus say, you got to do something. The anger's not enough. The righteous indignation isn't enough. The Facebook status and the tweets and the water table or the water cooler talk isn't enough. Good intentions aren't enough. So I reached out to somebody through, of all things, Twitter. Somebody that I got into contact with, through, of all things, a sports talk radio show that we both listened to. And I knew from his Twitter moniker that his name was Quad City Pat. And I thought, hey, I'm Quad City Rob. And he's a DCFS investigator. So I reached out to him and met him for lunch and talked to him about what we can do, how we can be about prevention, what can we do. You know, who can we help? What can we do? What can I do as a pastor? What could we do as a church? Because I know that there's other people that I come to worship with that have compassion, that see the problem, that have been lifted, that as horrible as this situation was, it lifted a veil of secrecy, and it's stirred some anger in people, and it's stirred some compassion. So what can we do? What can we do together? Who can we reach out to now before it becomes something so horrible? Who can we help? And so now we're starting. And it starts with education, to learn about what it is, what can you do to prevent? How important are, you know, just parenting classes and you know, simple guidance for new parents and single moms in particular that are strung out. You know, how can we lend a hand? You know, what kind of homes can we reach out to? What's out there? What's available that we can donate to? And then to begin, you start with educating, and then you start to relate, and you start to serve, and you start to donate things maybe, and you donate your money or you donate your time and you donate your heart to something that's bigger than you are. And how can you advocate for something? Who can you write letters to? And who are the powers that be that can affect change, that can write laws that make this kind of stuff harder, that can, you know, tougher prosecution laws or better protection laws? What can we do to advocate for the voices, for the children that don't have a voice? But what is it that you're, what's grinding your gears, as they say? You know, we look out into this world and you know that there's hurt. There are people that need God. It might just be a friend. It might be a coworker that needs a friend, that needs the truth of Jesus Christ, that needs the good news. It might not be a big, grand social issue. But no matter what, no matter how big or how small, no matter whether it's a grand sweeping thing or just a neighbor that's in need, it starts with one person with some compassion, with a heart for Jesus that's willing to reach out and do something about it. And folks, it starts with one people, but it can't end with one. It can't. One person can't do it all. Because if you try, that's a sure recipe for burnout. You need a team. You need partners. And this is a big reason why we are a church. So that we can come together and figure out what is it that's burning in you. What's burning in you? Who, what people, what person, what group is striking a flame inside you? Who can you clothe? Who can you feed? Who can you reach out to? Who can you teach? Who can you hold? Who can you invite? It's a big job, and we can grow weary. So go to the water. Find some rest in Jesus. Find rest in worship. Find partners, find teammates, find those that love you, that care about the same kinds of things, the kind of compassion, the kind of love of Jesus that transcends the kind of divisions that we so like to wrap ourselves up in. The labels, the liberal or conservative, the red or blue, you know, the compassion of Jesus transcends all of that. So talk to Chris about being on the outreach team. Talk to Chris about volunteering at the wardrobe. Talk to Carol about the community Sunday dinner, how you can help out. Talk to Aaron about some kids that need somebody. Talk to me. Talk to Pastor Don. Talk to each other. Talk to your neighbors that aren't here and gather more people so we have more teammates and more partners. And know that there are sheep without a shepherd. And we might ask, Jesus, who's going to take care of them? Know the response. You do it. And we can do it together.